Hey, everybody. Today, I want to talk about Daughter of the Beast by E.C. Greaves, the first book in the Vashivka trilogy. I am not going to lie. It took me like 6 tries to get Vashivka. I don't know why I can't get that down, but it is the first book in the Vashivka trilogy. It is 374 pages long. It is a Slavic fairy tale-inspired epic fantasy that had me enchanted from the first page to the last. That's right, dear. I'm going to keep that in. My wife thought that was a really stupid line. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but I'm going to keep it. Published in March of 2022. This will be the third of my Spiffbo 9 finalists that I'm doing. This book is super cool, has really awesome concepts. As I mentioned, it has a Slavic fairy tale inspiration behind it. It's something that Eastern European feel that I have a kind of idea of, you know, the fairy tales and things like that, but I've absolutely never spent any time really studying that in the same way that I have for more of the Western European style. So I was generally aware of the races and things that we're going to be talking about, but certainly not, don't have any background in it. So it was a fun book to read that way. I'm going to break down first the world. Then I'll talk about the main character. There's only one point of view character. Then I will talk about the plot, then the bad, then the good. I think that breaking it down that way is going to be the easiest. That's one of my most common ways of doing that. But the world is super cool. We are dealing with absolutely no humans at all in the story. For me, what having no humans did was take my own moral compass that I sometimes I'll see things in books and just immediately kind of decide that some people are bad because of the things they do. For example, I'm always going to think that slavery is a negative thing, right? I'm always going to be a person who thinks that that generally having, you know, a theocracy or something like that isn't going to be the best interest for people's freedoms. So being able to take the humans out of it kind of took a little bit of that subconscious thing that's always in there out. So when we're dealing with like raiding or one of the races that I'm going to talk about in just a second, like their entire society is based upon like raiding and pillaging. And while they seem terrifying at first, the author does such a great job of, you know, of making us care about these people by the end that I kind of root for them, even though I know that they're causing misery and destruction. So with that being said, let's get into... let's read the book blurb and then get into the plot. When her sleepy village is raided by the Volkari, the fearsome warrior women of the ancient wilds, only Zentile Fairwinter is taken. Claimed as a daughter by their infamous matriarch, Zentile is trained to hunt, to fight, and to kill, all for a purpose, which remains ever out of her grasp. In the company of their unruly young, she might find her sisterhood. In their unique customs and beliefs, she might find beauty. And in the violence of their raids, she might even find glory. But it is the reason for her capture that Zentile truly seeks. It is a truth that must be earned from the very spirits of the dead, a future paid for in the blood of those Zentile once called her own. It is a purpose that promises the liberation of not just she, but of all the ancient wilds. From an evil far greater than any marauding warrior women, warrior or no, however, the Volkari are not like other women. The Volkari are monsters. And sometimes only the truly monstrous have what it takes to save the world. Steeped in Slavic myth, and appealing to adult and young adult readers alike, Daughter of the Beast is a rich and unique fantasy coming-of-age story. It is the first of an exciting debut trilogy by E.C. Greaves, which blends action and adventure with themes of belonging, identity, destiny, and a girl's place in a harsh and uncaring world, built by men and built for men. As the blurb says, we're dealing with an area called the Ancient Wilds. Basically, it's like a frontier area that is currently being starting to be fought over by two empires. Both empires are basically ruled by a race called the Hobgoblins. They seemed an awful lot like your Dungeons and Dragons style goblin. Bigger though, more like human sized. They're green skinned though, like you would imagine. Then you have the Kikamori, which are like the Fae is what they're described as. They're like 5 feet tall. That's what Zentile is. The other big race that we're going to deal with are called the Vulkari, as the book blurb mentioned. Well, they are like 7 foot tall bipedal wolf. I think they're described more as like looking like hounds, but I kind of thought of them as like vicious wolves, right? They're undisciplined and unruly raiders, but they're like shock troops because they're so much bigger than everyone else. There's two things. One, that they're matriarchal. So in this case, the women are ruling everything. The males are basically like servants and breeding stock. And it was kind of cool, like, you know, flipping that common trope on its head. The hobgoblins are definitely a very patriarchal society. Women, you know, aren't allowed to fight or anything like that. So that, you know, provides a nice little balancing point and a little bit of conflict between a Zentile and a hobgoblin who she becomes very close with as the book goes on. We're going to deal with like kobolds at one point. They're a pretty minor deal in this, but they are, they're like small and shifty, just like you'd imagine in Dungeons and Dragons. There's going to be a few other things that we'll deal with here and there in small numbers, but for sure the three big like races that you're going to deal with are the hobgoblins, who are like the military might of the land. They're going to rule both of the empires that we're going to deal with. There's going to be lots of Kimori in both empires as well, though. And mostly the Vulkari just fight for one side. So, like I said, I really thought that it was cool having no humans in the story. It just kind of took away, like I said, those any preconceived biases that I might have towards and against other people. I really like, too, that both sides, for the most part, comprised all the different races. So that way, like, we're not, you know, like, just predisposed to be in favor of one side or the other, right? I think as a human, it's always going to be a little bit difficult to not root for humans when you're dealing with other races. Maybe like dwarves or elves are well-liked, but I think that, you know, most of the other races are going to be naturally considered a little bit inferior to humans. So taking humans out was a nice touch for the story. Zentile, our main character, is Kimori, as I said, and then most of the other like major characters, except for one other one, are going to be the Vulkari that she's going to be raised with. So it's the hinterlands. The two empires that are fighting are, one is called the Merchant Combine. That's the side that like our main group and our one point of view character, Zentile, is going to be fighting against. They tend to be like the more draconian in terms of like they take away books and they put people into wherever they want them to be put into. So like even if you're a good blacksmith, if they don't need a blacksmith, they need a stable hand, well then they're going to make you a stable hand. So, you know, they're still kind of like naturally the more of the bad guys of the book. But the other is the Sakari Empire, and they're still very regimented and they force you to work really hard, but they kind of try to put people where would best suit them. They also, you know, they don't ban books and things like that. But I wouldn't say that, you know, either empire is exactly the good guys in a traditional human sense. The Vulkari, as we're going to talk about, they consider both sides bad and they're just trying to avoid being stuck in an anvil between the two, right? So, that's the world, basically. We're dealing with like a hinterland kind of area. There's a couple of big towns is all, some villages, a couple of fortresses. But generally, people are, you know, they're around in the wilds, and there's a lot of trekking from one place to the other as the story goes on. Getting into the characters, there's only one point of view character, and her name is Zentile. She is, as I mentioned, a Kimori. She's like 10, maybe 11 when the story starts in the prologue, basically, even though it's not called a prologue. I'll get into that in a minute. In the main part of the story, she's between like 13 and 15, maybe almost 16 at the end of the story. We're talking 11 to 16, so about a 5-year period as we go on. There are some other important secondary characters, but there'll only be one point of view character. Karthak is the leader of the Vulkari. She is very fearsome. like I said, she's like 7 feet tall. She'll kill people both with swords. She'll rip them apart, kill them with her jaws, all that kind of stuff. Then we're going to have, later on in the book, will be a hobgoblin who is the son of the king. So there's still an emperor above the king, but the way the Sakari Empire works is that each of their provinces is basically like an independent entity that sends tax money off to the greater empire, while the empire sends military help and things like that. She does have a friend who was a Komori that plays a role at the very beginning of the story and then not again until the very end, so it's not really that important to talk about. We have Masgar and Sarga. They're going to be her companions throughout the story. Even though they're younger than her, since the Volkari grow up earlier, they're basically like all like sisters who they start their training together and they go through. I mentioned that the first part's actually not called the prologue. And this is a fairy tale thing. They call them stitches. So it's a kind of a cool like background thing that it goes on throughout the story where she'll like stitch on a piece of leather her story. She can do whatever she wants to represent what she wants, but the first part's going to be the prologue. So let's go ahead and get into the plot and then the bad, the good, and my thoughts. So the first stitch is super cool and has like a real almost dreamlike or I guess nightmare-like quality to it. So Zentile is from a peaceful, idyllic village out in the wilds, and suddenly her village is raided by the Volkari. She is obviously terrified, but she is captured by Karthak and the Volkar, and then she's basically treated like a slave for several months. She gets beaten quite frequently. She is chained up on a pole for a while. Basically, it's like a nightmare, and it seems like things are going to go real poorly for her. And slowly, as Karthak gets to know her a little bit, and kind of tells her that, you know, eventually you're going to be important, that basically she's going to be her adopted mother. Zentile certainly doesn't believe this at the beginning, but then she's going to be taken to a walled city that's ruled by the hobgoblins. That's Stitch 2. Stitch 2 really serves as like our world building info dump section, but it's done really well because since Zentile was out in the wilds in a small village and she's only 10, she doesn't know anything about the rest of the world. So we're learning about the world as she's being told. And, you know, there's a good reason why she's being told, because the people who have her, the Sakari Empire and the Hobgoblins, they have, they're holding her for Karthak basically to kind of like give her this experience. And she'll stay with them for like a year. And that's like our Stitch 2. It was just such a great way to learn about the world and to get our info dumps that I so enjoy. They're done in ways that you know, really build the wider world, the major races, the major political players, and all that fun stuff. So then Zentile is taken back by the Volkar. At first she's terrified, but at this point she's treated, you know, really well. And then she starts training with some other pups, as they're called at this point. That's going to be her cohort and where her two best friends will come from. And she'll be trained to be a warrior and a raider during this time period. Then this is where we kind of get into knowing more about what her destiny is supposed to be and why she was taken by Karthak. I don't think it's considered too spoilery that Karthak takes her and tells her that she's going to be their savior and stop the Volkar from being basically crushed between the two anvils of the two civilized empires, who think that the Volkari are just rampaging wild beasts, which they kind of are, but they don't have any place in polite society. She's told almost from the very beginning this is why she's taken, so that's why I don't really consider that a spoiler. But it'll be, you know, not until very late into the story until she kind of learns why Karthak thinks that. So I think that that's going far enough into the plot, but it's pretty cool. She's going to do a lot of fighting and raiding with the Volkar. They do a lot of traveling. They're like semi-nomadic. So it's cool. We get to see a lot of different areas peopled by the different races, and and it's just a lot of fun. It's a very action-packed book. They are doing a lot of raiding. They're doing a lot of fighting. There's some siege battles, a lot of small stuff. But it's just definitely an action-packed book. Getting into the bad, I really struggle to think of what would be the bad. I don't know what I would consider the bad for me personally in this book. I guess the one thing you can say is if you want magic, there's no magic until very late in the book, except for in small, like supernatural more elements of it, right? I think that, you know, if we're thinking of it as an epic fantasy, maybe there's that. But otherwise, for me, I loved basically everything about the book. So let's go ahead and get into the good, and let's talk about what I consider the real strengths of the book. The world building is amazing. Like I said, I really liked having no humans. Zentile is a pretty fun character for, you know, being a 10-year-old girl when it starts off. She's terrified at that beginning part. But then she, you know, grows up with them and then truly, you know, sees herself as a Volcar by the end. I thought that the way the stitches work was also pretty awesome. That first stitch, that prologue, I mean, it really felt almost like nightmarish and dreamlike as Zentile is, you know, first captured and dealing with captivity and the way she's treated. It feels like a nightmare. It feels very fairy tale like, and I thought that that was really awesome. That the way that the beginning was done. Then I like how there's six stitches. Right, it's broken down into that very beginning. Then it's broken down to the world building stage. Then it's brought into her training, her, you know, coming into her full. Then we have the like real climactic battle scenes, and then the end of the book where, you know, all of the big, really impactful things have happened, and it's kind of like an epilogue, but, you know, still important storyline, and where we see where the book is going to go in the future. So I just felt like the way it was broken down into those areas was a real strength of the book, and I liked the way that the world building and the way that each stage was broken down. Having no humans meant that I didn't have like one group that I was inherently rooting for, even if it's just an unconscious bias. So that was a lot of fun. The two empires, while they have some pretty big differences, they're both still fighting over and trying to take over, you know, this wild area that they're contesting. So, you know, there's big differences, but they're also, you know, similar in many ways too. The book was also very entertaining, tons of fighting, tons of raiding. There's lots of action scenes. And I think that from the beginning to the end, it was very action-packed. And like I said, reminds me in some ways of like Mark Lawrence's books, The Broken Empire trilogy, where like an awful lot happens in under 400 pages. There's certainly not a ton of just sitting around a campfire. Now, the last part, getting into my own thoughts on it. I think I've been pretty clear so far on how I feel about the book. I absolutely loved it. It is a hard 10 out of 10 for me. Honestly, this book is a contender for me for my favorite book of the year. Right now, it's probably like sitting there one or two with Reign and Ruin by J.D. Evans as my top two in terms of books that just absolutely blew me away that I love from start to finish. I've mentioned once or twice that December and January, maybe even, I plan on reading a bunch of second and third or however many long books that I haven't read yet from the first books in a series. I absolutely plan on reading these. I don't really have anything bad to say about it from my own perspective, my personal viewpoint. I thought that the book was just amazing. I loved having no human characters. I loved the main character, you know. Sometimes starting off with a 10-year-old is not a good way to go, but the way that the book was broken down, I thought it worked really well. It served as a great world-building tool, and as she grew up and got older, it served to really integrate us into the society of the Volcari, who, you know, are the main group that we deal with. The author did an amazing job of getting me to care about a race that is otherwise doesn't have a ton of redeeming qualities if you're not a member of their race. You know, the only thing, as I've mentioned already, is maybe it would have been cool to have a little bit more of the magical element to it, But there's still quite a bit of mysticism. It does seem like it's going to make a little bit of a change. There'll be a lot more magic in book two. But obviously, if it's up there at one or two on my favorite books of the year, it's probably going to end up being my favorite in the Spiffbowl competition. I still have 6 more books to read. I'm almost done with the 4th book so far. So there's still 6 more chances for that not to be the case. But I loved the 6 Stitches. I loved the fairy tale beginning. I loved the writing style being really action-packed and compact, like I said, like Mark Lawrence. I just cannot recommend this book enough. Once again, 10 out of 10, and absolutely loved it. My next book will be Master of the Void by Wend Raven. I am about 60% done with it so far. I am enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to doing my review episode. If you like my videos, if you would be so kind as to like and subscribe to my channel, Nerd Book Review, I would absolutely love and appreciate it. Thank you.